Thanks, Tanya. And let me add my warm welcome to everyone, especially if you're joining for the first time. Welcome, Vera, just joining. And if you are joining for the first time, just to let you know how this is going to work, there's a set of articles which hopefully all of you received and you may have gotten to read. But I'm going to start out by taking about 5 minutes to summarize the articles. I'll just get someone needs to go on mute because there's a bit of background noise. Yeah, I'll summarize the articles and then we will do some polls to decide together which articles we want to talk about the most, and then we'll just have an open conversation. So whether you read the articles or not, that's really fine. Everyone's welcome to jump in with comments, with questions, and we'll see where we go from there. So yeah, about 5 minutes to summarize this month's articles, and I'm reading from my notes here, okay? The articles this month cover topics from transformational innovation through to the evolving role of HR. The first article is Scaling Up Transformational Innovations. It comes from HBR. It argues that for large companies in mature sectors, growth depends on transformational innovation. The authors are supported by research from Procter and Gamble. They outline four critical success factors. One is providing sufficient leadership. This means the CEO or other top executive spends more time on long-term, high-risk transformations rather than day-to-day operations, often by delegating operating decisions. Two, building the right team. Here, you need a leadership role responsible for integration across functions for transformation projects and a commercial leader ensuring innovations are commercially viable. Three, unlocking resources. This could mean ensuring centralized funding or reallocating resources within business units. And four, making big bet decisions. This requires taking a long-term view and using forward-looking metrics. It's a top management focused article, but with some org design takeaways. Then we have the next one, the role of HR in driving work transformation. It's written like an interview with three experts. And this piece explores HR's role in org design, workforce analysis, and planning. A key theme is that HR needs to be strategic and deeply understand the business. On the topic of technology integration, the advice is HR should get involved early, contribute insights on skills gaps, collaborate on solutions, and proactively plan for the future workforce. The third article, consumer products companies, your strategy evolves, so why doesn't your organization? Focuses on challenges specific to the consumer goods sector, such as the demand for volume growth, advances in AI, disruptive competitors, and shifting employee expectations. It presents three pillars for success: organizing for innovation, enabling dynamic resource allocation, and being talent focused. One recommendation is to differentiate between activities to run the business and activities to change the business. This is an idea that applies beyond consumer goods. Now, the fourth article, Unleashing Competitive Advantage, the Power of a Skills-Led Organization. This one's also aimed at an HR audience and discusses the shift from thinking about roles to focusing on skills. One takeaway is that filling skills gaps internally can often be more cost-effective than recruiting externally, but this requires robust data on skills, which is still an emerging capability. The article outlines steps for building that data, technologies to leverage, and practical do's and don'ts. Finally, there's a text on socio-technical systems theory, or STS. It provides a simple definition of STS, which might be useful if you don't already know much about it. STS emphasizes the importance of both the social and technical components of an organization and how they interact. Social elements, things like team dynamics and culture, affect how people communicate and collaborate. On the technical side, machinery, software systems, and workflows can help productivity, but to maximize performance, organizations have to align these two elements. The article provides brief examples from Volvo to healthcare to the US Postal Service, making the theory more tangible, along with high-level practical steps to get started. Okay, so that was this month's articles summarized. Let's go ahead and decide together which ones to discuss. We're going to do that through a poll, Tanya, to start with the poll about which article resonated for people and they got the most value from. So, yeah, everyone go ahead and choose one of the articles and we'll see which one is the most popular in this case.
It is a spread across all five articles, which is always fun. And for the folks who are first-time participants, this doesn't mean it'll be the only article we talk about. It's just kind of a starting point for which one we go. So it looks like most of you have voted. So we do have one squeaking out, barely a winner. Let's see.
Okay, so it looks like the first one got just a few more votes, and then the last two also got quite a few votes. So I'm just noting that. So the first one, let's spend some time to talk about that first one, scaling up transformational innovations. And for anyone, let's start with anyone who voted for that one, who'd like to share, what did you find particularly compelling about this one? By the way, as we're talking, feel free to just jump in. But if someone else is talking, then raise your hand and I'll keep an eye out for that so that I can invite you to speak next. Anyone who voted for that article and would be open to share with us, what did you find really interesting about it?
I didn't vote for it, but I had it was a close second. I thought it was practical. Most of the time in these organizations, the innovation people are too far out in front of the parade and they don't connect back. And it had practical tips for how to connect back and how to test and how to stay connected and what the roles would be. So I thought if you were newer to the space, it would be fairly useful summary. So I thought it was pretty well done.
Thanks, Gina. Yeah, I see some nodding. What kind
Yeah,
of a...
I
Go ahead.
sorry. I couldn't raise my hand, but it seemed like because I'm in the car. I'm sorry about that.
Okay, Susanna, go ahead.
I felt the same. Even I also didn't vote for this one, but I found indeed very practical and very focused on leadership and the role that they have to play in allocating the right resources, delegating to the right talent. And for them also to really step away from day-to-day business. So I hope our leadership reaches.
Yeah, it looks like a
Yeah,
good
it
one
looks
to
pretty
share
good.
with leadership, perhaps.
I
Thanks,
think there were
Susanna.
a couple of interesting things in here that teed up some interesting conversations, I guess. So I did vote for it for that reason. There's one line in there that says, all the common methods of financial analysis are systematically biased against high-risk innovation.
So that could be its own whole article, right? Which I would love to read. But I thought that was an interesting thing to tee up a conversation. And then it kind of left me, the article left me wondering, like, how to design for the blueprint that they've laid out. So we have to design the roles, the two roles they talked about, including designing operations for innovation, designing metrics to make innovation choices. So it laid a blueprint that then I thought we could have some interesting conversations about how to then design for these things.
Yeah, I love that, Jardina. And it sounds like something I'm working on right now, actually. But so I'm really curious what people think about that. Who else?
That was my favorite part of the article as well, that all methods are systematically biased in one way. And I find the same thing, not just financial, but I find the same way. I'm like a governance and risk expert. And I think that a lot of that same legacy thinking applies to governance and risk and can really inhibit people transformation in some pretty significant ways. So I like thinking about it like that too, Jardina.
Yeah, I like that, Selena. Thanks. Thank you. The article, this article, it had kind of, it was structured with these four success factors, and then each of those success factors had kind of two or three subpoints under it. What else, for those of you who've read it, what other ones of those elements resonated for you? Welcome in, Shan, who's just joining, or anyone else who's just joining.
Oh, yeah. Sorry for that.
If you had the articles already, we're talking about the first one on the list, which is called Scaling Up Transformational Innovations.
Sorry, Jody, can you repeat your question about of the is it the four elements in their playbook?
Were there others specifically, the specific points, which really resonated for you?
I can come in on something, Jody, if I may.
Go ahead, Tim.
I apologize if it wasn't this article. Probably like most people, I've read so many things lately that some of them are merging into one. And, but it probably would be relevant for this, which was when you're coming up with an innovation, then you really need to connect the R&D teams and the commercial teams pretty early on, so you don't end up making a mistake, something that's a fantastic idea, but actually there's no market there, or it just wouldn't be scalable. So as I say, apologies, I've been trying to scan through to see if I could see that point in this article, but I know I've read it somewhere, so but it would be relevant for this.
Thanks, Tim, for bringing it in because it is valuable. I do believe it was in this article when they talked about integrating the different teams from R&D through commercial for that very reason. Love that. So Suzanne talked about something about you. I think Suzanne, it was you that said, I hope that our leaders would read this. And so that sparked a question for me, which is if you were to share this with a CEO or a senior leader in your organization, what might you tell them about it, or what might you want to highlight for them to take away?
For me, it would be mainly ensuring that that they have the right cross-functional teams allocated, so not working in silos. So not an R&D department and a commercial department, but really bringing them together to focus on the end result. And for them then to step away from the day-to-day management of other things and really like act as a sponsor for this innovation.
Yeah, I like that, Susanna. One of the parts that struck me was about the top management needs to be taking a longer term view than everyone else. And I feel like that is, something to remind or inspire the top leaders to do. I see in the comments a few people are really new to this call, so you're really welcome to be here as an observer. You're also welcome to kind of jump in if there's questions about the topic. And also keep using the chat. One way to contribute is to jump in with saying something, and another way is to put in your comments in the chat. I'm not really reading it all, but feel free to use the chat as well for comments. This article was written somehow targeted at large companies in mature markets, and it sounds like it's resonating with quite a few of you. Is there someone who's from a different context, like smaller companies or less mature markets, who wants to, does it also resonate with you? Does it ring true also if you're working in a different context? Or is everyone here working with large companies? Hey, hi, Larry.
So
Think.
I only read a part, I skimmed the article, so I don't have an in-depth knowledge about the article, but I agree with so many of the points that many of you have talked about, that transformation of anything in an organization is generally a process, not an event, and it takes long time to do that. And so getting the senior leaders to acknowledge that this is going to be many months or many years, whatever the change initiative is important. And many times they do make financial decisions, and they're good financial decisions. They're trying to save money or be more efficient, et cetera. However, there's often unintended consequences to those that were not considered. So while they might be saving money by doing X, they're also not looking at how it is interconnected with all the other elements of the system, and they're causing problems in other areas. And I can give you example after example after example of where I've seen this be done. And I also agree with the article when it talked about getting senior leaders to really agree about moving forward with this transformation or innovation. And my rule of thumb is 80% of the senior leaders have to be on board, or they probably should not go forward, because if something ever happened to a few of the proponents of it, then the program becomes a flavor of the month and is not sustainable in the organization. So the senior leadership team absolutely has to say, yes, this is what we want to do, and not only have their elevator speech, but model it and support it by resources and funding and people and space, et cetera. My thoughts.
Thanks, Larry. You said you're thinking of lots of examples, and I'm wondering if you or anyone else actually has examples of what are some good ways, or ways that you can design organizations or take action that helps leaders to take that forward-looking view.
I don't have the small company perspective you asked for a minute ago, but another hurdle that wasn't mentioned here is the incentives. They have to have incentives on the receiving side, to be able to participate and to connect. And that is another thing that I've seen be a stumbling block several times.
Yeah, exactly, Gina. That totally resonates. I remember someone telling me that, with the transformation they're trying to make, they are expecting leaders in their organizations to act against their own interests because the incentives are rewarding something different from what they want them to do. So, yeah, that's crazy.
Well, I
Okay,
think that
probably.
goes.
Sorry.
I broke the rule.
Jardina, go ahead and then Tim.
Goes back to what we talked about the financial system working against you and having policy and process that work against what you're trying to get. And what it said in the article, I didn't even read say the rest of it, was because of that, the CEO conviction is so important, but it can't only be CEO conviction. Like the systems and processes have to support the CEO's conviction, right? It can't be
Right.
like he's leading the charge against the own his own system or his or her own system.
Right. I have Tim and then Mike.
Thank you, Jody. What is the rule that I broke as well?
I was thinking that innovation can happen anywhere in the organization. And the trick is, how do you get it in front of the CEO and before the executive team and get it into the normal process flows for innovation if they exist? So I'm thinking about a client I worked with, a truck manufacturer, and I was asked to develop a growth, strategic growth course for many of the senior leaders in the organization. And we actually bubbled up different ideas from that group of leading senior managers. It started out as a traditional executive education program. Then someone came up to me and said, "Well, you know, I've got this idea that I've had percolating in the background here. I can't seem to find sponsorship. Could I share this idea, this broad cross-section of senior leaders?" And so he presented a study that had been done in terms of expanding the distribution and maintenance part of the business, and had been sitting there for 4 years. And it drew the interest, a critical mass of the senior leadership team, but not the executives. And we then drove that into, we then turned the executive development program into, or the leadership development program into sort of a business incubator. And then we had three or four things that came out of that executive or senior leadership development program, and then put it into a third year enterprise-wide executive team leadership program. And it went up, the ideas then went into the normal flow of things and then became new businesses. So it created new businesses out of the leadership development program because we developed a critical mass of people, senior leaders in the organization. We're now endorsing it and talking about it and supporting it.
Right. Thanks for that, Mike. It sounds like starting from the leadership perspective actually enabled them to change the system as well.
It did. It
Yeah.
was very fascinating.
Amazing. Okay, great.
Jody, I just wanted to mention that there's something in the chat from Teresa about scenario planning and pre-mortems could be a way
Ooh.
of sort of pre-setting, I guess, the Teresa, I don't know if you want to talk more about it, but sort of pre-setting the expectation of what might happen.
That sounds really interesting. Teresa, would you be open to share a bit more?
Yeah. I find I've worked in legacy organizations a lot where they particularly want to go through digital transformation, and I'm working in a public body based in the States, but it's a global organization at the moment, and that equally is trying to go more digital. And there seems a lack of use of different tools and techniques, and that the old ways of strategic planning or whatever that might be don't fit with working in those new ways. And the first time I was working on digital transformation was 10 years ago. And I say, like, my experience does seem to be in legacy organizations, and I try to introduce or work with teams to introduce new ways of thinking and planning so that it helps them to think differently around what they want to achieve, because I say old business methods and models are not going to cut it anymore.
Thanks, Teresa, for sharing. That sounds good.
Jodie, I was going to add in as well that okay, just speak.
Tim, please go ahead, and then after you, I'll call on Lillian.
Thank you. Yeah, I was going to say I can see some application of this in the higher education sector in the UK. So part time, I sort of work in the academic area, and possibly like universities in the US, universities in the UK are going through some huge challenges at the moment because their revenue is going down. People aren't going to take first degrees or master's degrees as much as they used to, etc. So I think there's some certainly applications there. And I think one thing that senior leadership in the higher education, the university sector could do is one, actually coordinate amongst themselves, but use some of the expertise that they've got in the university that are not necessarily part of the leadership, but actually advise other people on these very topics. And yet, because they're part of the organization, they don't necessarily get consulted with as to what should we do. They almost get ignored, although those same experts are writing the articles and in some cases consulting with organizations on these very topics of how do we scenario plan, what do we need to do, how do we coordinate our efforts, etc. So that could be one thing that I think that would help them.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Tim. Amazing. Lillian, you had your hand up. Thanks for your patience.
Hi. So I also come from large companies, but not retail per se, like the examples in this, or I guess consumer goods, like the examples in the article. So when I was reading the article, I wondered whether companies that have a culture of constant process improvement have a culture of innovation that spreads throughout all teams. In one particular company that I worked at some years ago, there was a strong focus on always improving whatever you were doing. And it really didn't matter what team you were in. It was not like only innovation happened in the R&D team. It was really across, like could be finance, that we were like innovating how they were doing finance. Like all corporate functions, like basically everybody in this large company innovated. And it innovated because it was like embedded in the culture in a way that you didn't know you were innovating, but you were always finding ways to do it better. We did Kaizens and Gembas, which is a process improvement technique. And we didn't think that as innovation, but now while I was reading this article, I'm like, we were always innovating because we were finding ways to do this better. And of course, the tech teams that were working on the products that the company sold were doing the same thing. So they were innovating on consumer products. But it was part of the culture of the company. It wasn't like just the R&D team.
So, Lillian, that's fascinating because I'm immediately wondering what were the things in the system that caused that innovation to be happening all the time? Like what was different about the design?
I think it was the focus on process improvement, and process improvement was one of the things that got rewarded by leaders. And the process improvement led to early wins and quick wins that also got rewarded for all the teams because you got kudos from the management chain when you improved little things here and there. We call them paper cuts. And the more paper cuts you got rid of, the more you contributed to the team.
Great. Yeah, thanks, Lillian. It's a great example. Yeah. Selena, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to react to what Lillian was raising. I think continuous improvement is so amazing, and those like lean process improvement practices, I think, are so great to encourage innovation. But I worry that when companies predominantly look at it through a process lens, you don't get those large scale strategic shifts and improvements because of things like the legacy, financial analysis being, built for different times, or perhaps your market perspective being built for different times. Perhaps your process doesn't just need to be improved upon. Perhaps your process needs to be gotten rid of or completely changed dramatically. So I think there probably needs to be I think that continuous improvement is so exceptionally important, and the culture breeds innovation. But I think that there needs to be a separate process for fundamentally, is this still working to achieve the strategy that we've set for the company to enable those really big shifts and maybe rethinking our structures.
Yeah, thanks, Selena. This is a great point. Thanks. I'm really inspired by this conversation. Thank you, everyone, for that. I love the article as well. And since I'm just, that I'm working on something which is around helping those legacy companies transform towards a sustainability or climate change related strategy, a lot of this is super resonating with that kind of work. So appreciate that. Before we move on to a different article, does anyone have anything still they want to share about this particular article before we move on?
So I have a
Eric.
question for Selena, which is if the planning process is too myopic and is not seeing the big picture, what ideas do you have for helping the leaders see that bigger picture?
Oh my gosh, so many ideas. I've been on a year sabbatical where all I think about is governance for the future, and so this is like where my brain resides so much of the time. I think that these big strategic shifts, I think it's really important that we bring meaning to them and we sort of ritualize them for companies that align with, the culture of your company. Would differ vastly depending on what sort of company you're looking at. But I think that if we can start to take these big governance meetings that most people groan at and most people just think are just like monumentally huge wastes of time, where you get little slivers of information fed to you by sort of self-serving executives in other departments, or like a specific KPI deck that you ask for. I think that if you take these big meetings and sort of restructure them with a multidisciplinary approach and bring in multiple perspectives, AI is really great for like doing some contexting and out of the box thinking, that we can really like crack open thinking to larger shifts and perhaps longer term perspectives. I think we probably all in organizational design face that challenge of like short-termism. So I think that if we can really make something fun and interesting and worthwhile and like make your decisions of importance in these larger governance bodies, that you can really start to have that cultural shift of like the continuous nurturing, the continuous questioning of like, is this going to be good enough to get us to where the market is going in, several years? So that's kind of like very high level of what I think. But I also think that like a very stable component is necessary. So like a company's business architecture, that you need to be able to refer to it so you can understand like the operational consequences of your decisions and stuff. So I think there's like a lot of tools and sort of rethinking of how we put together governance dynamics that will shift in that direction. That's very abstract. And
Yeah,
so
Kurt Lewin had that same idea in 1940 called action research. Let's involve the people. So great. Appreciate it.
cool.
Yeah.
And I've also been all up in cybernetics lately, another, sort of more old school way of thinking about things that seems really relevant for today, that was kind of talked about in the socio technical systems article. And and in some others here too. So I think there's a lot of good old proven disciplines that we could revive to make sense of this crazy future that we're heading into.
Yeah, Selena, I want to build on what you said. One of the ways to make is make the these governance meetings more effective is to bring the outside in, bring different people, different voices into the conversation that might normally be missing, to offer insights into governance, the environment in terms of regulation, whatever it might be. When you add different voices, you get a much different outcome. You get a much richer outcome and better decision making too.
Hey, Selena, I think we've got some energy for conversations around reframing governance, like, governance for good or governance, reinventing governance or something like that. I love it.
I love energy around that. That's my entire mission in life is to help companies that want to be ethical and have their businesses make sense, transform their governance to do that. There's so much silly stuff that we do that's just counterproductive to so many of the things that us organizational design aficionados see in the world. It just seems like we're like, and why be at cross purposes?
Right, exactly. Sounds great. Thanks for inspiring us with that energy and idea. So that's been a great conversation about that one article. There were two others in the poll which came up also fairly popular. So I want to give you an opportunity to talk about one more of those. I think they were, Tanya, correct me if I'm wrong, was the article about STS and
The
how
unleashing competitive
was
advantage, the power of skill, of a skills.
skills led. Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Right. So we'll do this in a very not democratic way, but would anyone like to share what they found really interesting about either of one of these articles?
Well, I can go first on the skills one. I like that
Yeah.
for the same reason. I think it's helpful to have practical ways to move things forward. And my observation and experience has been a lot of attention on upskilling, but no one has really nailed how to do it. There's the concept of the talent marketplaces, and everyone knows how expensive turnover is, but just what that balance is. And it seems like it's very inconsistent and subjective and dependent on the leader. Some leaders are good at it and some aren't. And you would like to have a system not dependent on talent. And so that article was fairly practical around some of the things that you could do to move things forward. Two points in there that I thought were kind of missing. He said, don't focus too much on the platform. And my observation's been the exact opposite. It's just too much data for anyone to deal with without having some kind of a plan for a system. And then the other thing that I thought was an opportunity that he missed is I think a huge hindrance to this skills thing is the custom of using job descriptions. They just slow down everything to a crawl. They take up time. They don't serve any useful purpose. And so it would have been nice to address some of the obstacles in addition to some of the things that you do. But overall, a really good article and really helpful to the conversation, I thought, for people trying to work in that space and move things forward. That's one I would hand out to people.
Yeah, that's great, Gina. I thought that too. Anyone else want to share around that topic or that article around skills-led organizations, especially if anyone's maybe working on that right now or working with a company on that? Anything to share?
I have something to share, but I'm not working on that specifically. I mean, I do like the idea. We've had a lot of conversations and articles that we've read about deconstructing the job role into more granular roles or skills. So I do like that part. But I think that there was some danger in this article of having it be skills be too commoditized, because you can end up hiring for skills and not having like cohesion and interconnectedness. So I think that there is some danger of looking at of having too much reductionism in the job role.
Yeah,
And
interesting.
yeah, so there was a little, I like the concept, but there were some little nits in the article that made it, that got me a little nervous.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for bringing that perspective in, Jardina. Someone else like to weigh in on that? So, okay. And we could now move to another poll, but let me just check in before we do that, Tanya, if anyone wants to talk about the STS article, because that also got quite a few votes. And I'm sure that we have quite a lot of knowledge in this group about STS, if anyone is curious to learn more.
So, Jerry, I was going to step in from an STS perspective. STS perspective, you know, social technical systems normally look from a change management perspective, you know, in some of the organization. But when you look through the OD perspective, there is a different element. It's always about trying to look at how do you motivate people? You know, what are the things that can enable you to create positive impact on people and positive impact on the organization as a overall element? So that's the kind of the social element. And then technical element is not having the right tools and not right in, you know, a right environment and stuff like that, you know, will also kind of demotivate people. So how do you kind of combine that together to drive a better outcome, purpose-driven organization to drive that forward, really? So I think STS is, for me, is kind of a core element of the OD process.
Thank you, Sean. Yeah, you're getting nods for that as well. It's good to have that sharing. What I liked about this article, what I kind of didn't like, is it really simplified things. And then part of me thought, well, it's made it really too simple, and it made me want to go deeper, but perhaps that's a good thing. Because a lot of the STS materials that you read does get quite deep. Vera. Something to bring in for this one. You need to go off mute.
Sorry, because I'm using the mobile. It's not easy. I'm in a crowded place. Okay. So I have just a question because I know such. I worked in org design mainly in a different way for many years. And from 5, 6 years, I start knowing better the socio-technical system. Now I'm deeper inside the full scale chain process, but I want to know more. So if you suggest something to start studying the socio-technical system, except for the full scale change that I went deeper inside during this year. So I want to learn more, not just this part. And as a lot of people in the community knows better than me, if you have some suggestion, this is my question.
Great question. Is it your question about where would you go to learn more about STS?
I want just to start. I know full scale because I just met Paul and start studying, and that now I made some project on that, and I love it for the impact. But I don't know, except of these, which is the starting point, a book or something to start. This article is very clear to me, but it's very simple. So
Yeah.
just to deep dive a little bit.
Where's the next step? Yeah. Tanya just shared in the chat the link to the STS roundtable, which is the community that where you can find a lot of resources. And I'm pretty sure that on the ODF website in the resource section, there is an article which is certainly more in depth and longer than this first bit. Who else has some ideas?
I can share the experience. So working in a totally different way for years in a big company, and then start working with the medium and medium-sized company with full scale. It was the first one that I met. I find totally different way to to design the organization and to go faster. Because sometimes when I meet the customer says, oh, we need too much time to do that because we need too much people to involve. But at the end, what surprised me a lot is that you work in a more faster way, even if at the beginning you have a lot of work to do because you have to work much more with people. So for me, I find it very impacting, and this is positive experience. It's the reason why I want to deep dive on that.
Yeah. Vera, thanks for that. And you mentioned whole scale change, which I know some people here also have experience in, and maybe others don't. I don't know if you maybe have a link to the book or something you can put in the chat if anyone wants to learn more about.
Yeah, I can put in the chat. Perfect.
Thank you. That's great. Given the time, I want to give us a chance to vote on one more article. And Tanya, I don't remember exactly the wording of the second poll question, which is more about which article caused you some tension. That could mean you didn't like it, or it could mean you wanted more or something that caused a reaction. Let's do that one.
Are you all able to see it?
No, not yet.
Because it says it launched, but...
Or I can't. I don't know if anyone else can.
I got other heads shaking that it was not working either.
No, I can't see it, yes.
That's very strange.
Yeah.
Let's see if I duplicate it, if it'll...
If not, I've got another... I can pivot... Yeah, Tanya, don't worry, because maybe there's a more interesting question I have for people from today's conversation. So we talked about some really interesting things. I'm wondering if you take some thought, was what has been, actually, let me do something different. Would anyone like to bring us a different question to this group, since there's so many smart people in the room that you'd like to talk about? And then after that, I want to ask you for some reflections. Any big questions? It's your chance to ask the wisdom of this group. And if not,
I have a question.
Go ahead, Vera.
Okay. How to deal with the company in which... the major part of people, or a big part of people, also middle management and some people from top management, agrees to move forwards, but the CEO is not convinced about it. So the sponsor is not a real sponsor. How you manage this challenge? How you try to manage this?
Okay, great. Let's see if we've got some ideas in the room. So what I'm hearing, Vera, is you've got a lot of energy for change coming from middle management and from the employee population, but a key stakeholder, a sponsor or a CEO, is still not wanting to move ahead.
He wanted to move ahead, but when he discovered that the part of the company is running will be touched, it was a little bit, not so sure about it.
Okay. Who would like to share some ideas, experiences, and approaches to this kind of situation? Larry, go ahead.
So if the senior leaders are not on board, again, my rule is 80%. Then it's probably not going to be a sustainable change. So one idea that I've seen be pretty effective on a number of occasions is you identify the cost that the problem is causing the organization, or continuing on in the same way, what is that cost versus the cost of doing some change. and you bring that financial data to the senior leadership team and tell them how much this is costing not to change. That seems to get their attention. That doesn't mean they'll come on board, but it gets their attention anyhow.
Has anybody experienced that situation in terms of considering how to leverage board of directors? Because they do respond to the board of directors, and I'm wondering if anybody's had that experience at all.
I haven't, but I watch Succession. I'm just kidding. But I just think it's dangerous for middle management to go around the CEO to the board of directors. I mean, I don't know that I would want to do that, but let me know if you have a different experience.
Well, many times the board of directors are also picked by the company CEO or president. So they're friends and or their colleagues. And so, you know, but I hear what you're saying, Mike, and I like it because we've been in, I used to work for the federal government in America. And when we had found that the senior leaders were the problems, there was always somebody above them we could go to. And what we requested often is that they be involved in the reporting anyhow of the data we found. And that sometimes one occasion we had two of the most senior leaders fighting each other. And we said, we need to have your boss involved because we knew one of them was going to be gone in 6 months. So we try to the extent we can. Sometimes we're successful, sometimes not.
Thank you.
Vera, thanks for bringing us a question, and hopefully that sparked a few ideas. Great. Okay, wonderful. So then I'm going to switch to a different question, which is reflecting on what you heard today, all of the different topics we thought about. What is, you know, what's a takeaway that you're going to take away from this call, or something you'd like to try? And maybe take a second to think about that for yourself, but then I'd love to hear some takeaways from you. And for those of you who are maybe joining for the first time in a bit observer mode, I'd love to hear from you as well. But I'm looking first to some of our regular speakers to give one example. Anyone with a takeaway, something that inspired you from the conversation? Hi, Evgenia, I saw you turned your camera on, so maybe I'm putting you on the spot, but how about you?
I don't mind sharing. I'm still getting familiar, guys. Hi, everyone. And I want to announce to you guys that I'm not an OD person. I'm actually an economics-based consultant who's worked for over 20 years with Fortune 100 and medium-sized and startups as well. And I kept seeing the same problems. So far, I'm still like kind of almost like, how do you say it? I don't want to speak up much because I don't know yet what, you know, I see there's a lot of very experienced OD people here specifically, but I'll just wanted to share that where I came and why I came to this organizational design and sounded like this forum was welcoming of multidisciplinary. Serena, I think, said it. I think right now we really deal with like complex challenges and multidisciplinary is really the key to, you know, to really navigate the complexity. And where I come to, add it is, as a business consultant, I've seen so many issues with silos and organizations because my function was actually going and doing a specific technical thing, but we were covering across all the departments and organizations. So I got to talk to all the people across organization, but there were all these challenges. So at the end of the day, right now, where my work led me and hence the like an organizational design is sort of creating interventions to facilitate the human side of change.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I've seen over and over again is that there are processes and structures, and we are really good on steroids on that. But if people are not on board, things are not working. And, you know, usually people, just as humans, we are scared of change. So when we're scared, we go into fight, flight, or freeze mode, right? And that definitely doesn't help innovation or engagement at all. So I feel like strongly that we're really not attending to the human side of, like, you know, change and, you know, in OD as well and change management as well. And sort of that's what I'm trying to bring, and how I'm bringing it is through combining sort of, it's like, my core is I'm a business consultant, right? Like I want practical implementation of things and for impact, but then the how is, I think, what is key now, and multidisciplinary is key. And I would say the intersection that I'm currently really, it's been kind of a 16 year, like it's, I don't know, do I want to call it a hobby or life purpose? I don't know. But it's been 16 year journey. And it's basically at the intersection of this, you know, somebody also mentioned it, complexity theory, management cybernetics, combined with sort of how do we attend to human side, but in a little bit different non-traditional way. Traditional enough that Fortune 100 can digest it.
Yeah.
Still non-traditional for how we typically hold meetings. And then, you know, and then, so interventions, complexity theory, and sort of neuroscience.
It's great. We love to have people come in who've got a different kind of expertise and experience, and who can come and bring that to us and share with us, as well as learn more about org design. So I have the feeling that this is a great place for you to come and be part of this. I even think we have something coming up on our schedule. Maybe it's too early to say, that's something about economics and org design. Jardina's nodding. Yeah. Okay. Stay tuned, everyone.
Yes. So we'd love to have you join on that. And we would love to hear more about your background, your economics, and how that ties in.
Yeah.
So, but bear with me, because, you know, again, I feel like I'm like, you know, yeah, I'm on the spot a little bit, and I, you know, I need to learn a lot about OD. And again, processes and structures are still important, even for our brains to kind of, how do you say, tackle the change in a way. But then there's, I think, all these other aspects that we need to attend to in order for it to be kind of be able to be brought to fruition in a proper way, like bringing the humans along, basically.
Yeah. I want to thanks Evgenia, and I want to thank Katie as well in the comments commenting. Would love to learn more about socio-technical systems theory and applying it to org design. So there's lots of people here learning about that. I'm going to wrap us up because we're coming to the end of the time, but thank you so much, everyone, for showing up, sharing experiences, asking questions, and look forward to seeing you again. Tanya.
Jodi, thank you for raising your hand and jumping in and facilitating. For next month's conversation, I am waiting to find out if Andrew feels like he could get the newsletter prepared and out in time for us to jump it ahead a week. We typically do it on the last Wednesday of the month, and that falls on Christmas Day this year. So I figured we would try and jump it into the week prior. So don't just by habit sign up and assume we'll see you on the last Wednesday. Take note of the date when we do send out the announcement that the registration's open to sign up for the December session. In other words, I wish you all a great rest of your day, and I'll stay online for those of you who are newer folks that might have any questions about the community, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you all.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.